What makes your voice sound so funny?
I'm disguising it
How?
by talking through a rubber zombie takeout.
I thought it sounded like you were speaking through a rubber zombie takeout.
Hello and welcome to Zombie Takeout, the B-movie and cult movie show. I'm John.
And I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, we've got some news. This is from Slash Film. The future of Star Wars movies, Disney CEO Bob Iger says, less is more. Disney CEO Bob Iger recently talked about the potential oversaturation of Star Wars movies in the marketplace, clarifying certain public comments he'd made about the performance of the franchise as a whole so far. Speaking with BBC Radio, he said, quote, "I have said publicly that I think we made and released too many Star Wars films over a short period of time. I have not said that they were disappointing in any way. I have not said that I'm disappointed in their performance. I just think that there's something so special about a Star Wars film and less is more. Perhaps that's why the Obi-Wan and unquote. Perhaps that's why the Obi-Wan Kenobi movie with Ewan McGregor that was originally in the works, possibly as a trilogy, is being turned into a 6-hour series on Disney Plus instead. But until recently, Lucasfilms was planning on 2 different new Star Wars trilogies, one from Last Jedi director Rian Johnson and one from Game of Thrones creators David Benioff and D.B. Weiss. However, the latter has been wiped from the slate entirely, thanks to the duo's Netflix deal getting in the way. And as of now, the future of Star Wars on the big screen after Rise of Skywalker is uncertain. While Rian Johnson is still slated to bring a new trilogy to life, we have no idea what to expect from it. Maybe The Mandalorian holds the key to the future of Star Wars, but we won't know for sure until this first season plays out this year." So, I just wanted to bring this up to give you a chance to do a victory laugh.
I know. How many years ago was that where I called this?
When they first announced that they were doing one a year for the foreseeable future.
Yeah. I think I even said it before that. Well, I kind of had a feeling that Disney, this is exactly what Disney was going to do, is try to release one, at least one a year. And then I think when they put out the schedule, I think they had 2 a year at some points where it was like, you know, stories and saga, you know, movies.
Well, they were trying to compete with the MCU. Or not compete, because they own both, but, you know, they were trying to do the same thing.
Right.
Hoping for the same success, but it's not quite the same.
I think I said this back then. The appeal of it was a movie that comes out every 3 years is an event.
Yeah, exactly. And they eventually realized that. I did sign up for Disney Plus. The Mandalorian, I think is worth it alone. Mandalorian is brilliant.
Yeah.
It's the man with no name in the Star Wars universe. And they've just got a ton of other things that they own. Marvel, they own National Geographic, it turns out.
Yeah.
And they own Pixar in addition to all the Disney stuff. I've got a lot to catch up on. Little confession, I never bothered with all of those classic Disney films from the 90s.
Oh, God, no. Yeah.
I've never bothered. I've never seen The Lion King or Aladdin or, you know, any of those.
I mean, even as a kid, I was never a big Disney movie person.
See, I grew up on Looney Tunes.
Yeah, same
and,
here.
And I bought into the rivalry, so I never really cared about Disney. But I do at least want to see the Lion King.
Looney Tunes were irreverent, they're witty, and Disney was all just like institutional cooking and just, you know.
They're so well respected, though, and as an animation geek, just on a visual level, I do want to catch up on a lot of that stuff. But in addition to that, it's all the Star Wars and, you know, Nat Geo. Now, I was surprised they owned Nat Geo. So
like, I think I remember liking The Rescuers, but other than that, nah.
Yeah, I just, it's from a, you know, cultural relevancy standpoint, I feel like I should catch up on it. Anyway, on to this week's movie, which is from 1981, Student Bodies. This concludes our horror comedies of 1981 two-parter. And of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by the Horsehead Bookend Manufacturers of America. One of the last bastions of decency is the gentle satisfaction one gains from making a horsehead bookend. It's man's highest cultural achievement.
And also brought to you by... Oh, wait a minute. I left my sponsor in another room.
What?
Hold on. Hold on. I'll just wait right there.
We're recording.
I'll be right back.
And that, aren't you afraid something's going to happen? I mean, we know what happened to your computer last week.
Yeah. Yeah, this computer was a deadly weapon, wasn't it?
Yeah.
All right. Let's see what I can remember from this watching so long ago.
I unfortunately revisited it before this review.
I couldn't bring myself to, honestly, spoil what I reviewed to.
I'll be honest, I skimmed it.
I tried to, you know, keep my review as much of a poker face as possible, but, you know. What can we make of this? All right, so we have the high school... all your high school tropes. Mm-hmm. We probably should have came up with a title that played off the tropes as like the Saturday the 14th movie.
Yeah, House of Tropes. Yeah.
The House of a Thousand Tropes. But yeah. Oh well. Cannibal Tropes? No, I don't know.
The only things coming to mind is Rock and Tropes High School, but this isn't really a rock and roll high school situation.
No. You have a lot of your high school tropes. And pretty much it's Saturday the 14th, only they're using different horror movies. It's funny that they came out exactly the same time. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we have how it begins is there's a murderer on the loose, pretty much.
Well, the call is coming from inside the house.
Yeah.
They're literally playing on that gag.
They do that gag, the babysitter, you know.
And I think Scream probably ripped this off more than wherever that gag started.
Yeah, but Scream was at least, you know. Scream, I think, was a lot more cleverly written than this. Yeah. But anyway. So we have the babysitter doing things she should not be doing. The shocked parents coming home. Making fun of all of the things that babysitters should do, but not losing their shit was actually quite funny. Mm-hmm. And then so this killer being on the loose, of course, they're playing with the who did it, who could it be kind of thing. And various murders occur in various odd weapons between, you know, the chalk eraser, paper clips.
I did like that gag. The weapon, the choice of weapons.
Yes, and then it gets to this point where there's like a pep rally, and it's really, I don't know. The script then kind of takes a holiday. Your story.
it lost me a little after that. I was good up until about the middle.
Yeah, that is kind of where this kind of falls apart. They did because they pretty much abandoned the story. If you think about it, when they reveal the murder, it's a twist, but it's like it couldn't have happened. So they were kind of making fun of the twist, I guess.
Yeah, and it just got baroque at that point.
Yeah, and then there was a twist on top of the twist on top of the twist, and hilarity ensues.
Wow. And just a bit of background on the pedigree of the filmmakers. The movie was written and directed by Mickey Rose, with an uncredited Michael Ritchie co-directing. Rose was a TV writer whose credits include The Odd Couple, The Smothers Brothers, The Tonight Show, and episodes of Charlie's Angels, Love Boat, Taxi, and Too Close for Comfort. Student Bodies is his only directing credit.
Oh, wow.
Ritchie was a director whose credits include Bad News Bears.
Did we go to school with them?
We went to college with a guy named Mike Ritchie. Different person entirely.
A different guy? Okay.
Ritchie was a director whose credits include The Bad News Bears, The Golden Child, The Couch Trip, Cops and Robbersons, and The Fletch movies.
Wow, he did a lot of bombs. I mean, the first Fletch movie was one thing.
Yeah.
Wasn't the one the of
Bad
the
News
producers?
Bears was okay.
That's true.
But Matthew really carried it.
Yeah. The kids were pretty good in that, too. Mm-hmm,
true. But yeah, that's the pedigree of the filmmakers.
Didn't they do like a Robert Smithy in the producers?
There's a claim that Richie's uncredited because he was trying to do the Alan Smithy thing.
Yeah. Oh, so that was Richie that was the
He's Smithy. Uncredited, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not Alan Smithy. He's just his name is just isn't on it, but it's known that he was involved.
I thought when I saw the credits, I thought there was a Smithy. I'm like, wait a minute,
somebody
is
else.
That?
And I mean, like I said, I think the first half is pretty solid. I like that it's honest up front about having, you know, no horror movies made in the last few years lost money, so they're making a horror film.
Right.
Also, we have another Brando, this time Richard Brando, playing the breather. The kid from the last movie was also named Brando.
It was pretty obvious that the breather shtick was not going to last, not going to stay strong. I mean, it started out like, oh, this is a funny idea. But you realized after, I think, the second or third time, it was kind of like, this is starting to get old.
Once they started giving him more to say.
Yeah.
He has a monologue in the second half that was just intolerable. But there were some good gags in the beginning. I liked that it was set on Jamie Lee Curtis's birthday.
Right. They went through all the different possible days that it was set, but it was really Jamie Lee Curtis's birthday.
And
I agree. The first reel or two of this movie is strong, even.
Up until,
you can almost say.
I would say up through the deliberate R rating.
Yeah, that is where, like, it ends. Like, they just don't do the Zuckers.
No.
They
sustain the Zucker-level quality, because it is very Zuckers. They sustain that for, like, a half hour, 40 minutes.
And then they just, I don't know what it was.
I liked the call with the girlfriend while she's at the house talking about, you know, the history exam. Just remember that the North won. They're talking about the Civil War. She tells him, just remember that the North won. Oh, heavy. Like, she just was surprised. Love the psycho music coming over the phone. And the roll-top desk with all the weapons, because every weapon is, you know, a random mundane object.
Yeah.
Particularly love the funeral scene. They had a marching band after these two kids were killed. They had a funeral at school because apparently there's been a string of murders. And it was referred to as the big funeral. There was a marching band and cheerleaders.
Right. But, and I think that
got
was
a kick
before,
out of that.
I think that was before the R rating.
Yeah, that was that just before, because only notes I have here is I did love the breather's voice at first. Before
he
said too much.
I think it is kind of frustrating when you see something that really has potential.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of just, they didn't know how to end it.
And the only thing in the beginning that I wasn't too sure of that kind of carries through is the disabled gag. The blind guy and the guy in the wheelchair. A little unsure about how I feel about that. But
It was a little weird.
Yeah, but right in the middle of the movie, they show a guy sitting at a desk who explains that an R movie has to have strong language, nudity, or something, sexual situations, basically goes through the explanations, and how the movie has none of those. So I would just like to say, fuck you. That was the last, well, I won't say the last good moment in the movie, because there are like two lines after that that I did get a kick out of later in the film. But that's really where it stops being good.
Right. In fact, they could have just ended the movie there, honestly. that would have been a really funny way to have ended it.
Yeah, yeah.
But just telling the audience, fuck you. And I mean, you're, of course, hearing from the guy who's told the audience to go fuck themselves in so many episodes here.
But, true.
That would be good. I mean, like I said, the only the really strong recurring role gag that goes through the entire film of this that worked was the bit of the kids about to get it on, but the guy needing to leave to go get something.
Right.
Like, it was either birth control or it was, I think it was it garbage? I mean, they just kept, like, changing it. It was just, I mean, that was the one bit, I would think, that made it from beginning to end of the film that actually worked.
And right in the beginning when she awkwardly tells him to go take a shower. Just to get him out of the room.
That's right. That's right. She tells him to go take a shower first. And it just kept going with that. Mm-hmm. That one worked. But yeah, the bits with the breather and just...
They just kind of ran out of clever jokes about halfway.
Yeah. Which is a shame. I mean, it's the difference between this and Saturday the 14th was they didn't have a lot to work with at the beginning of Saturday the 14th.
Right.
You know, they were stretching the material they had. There wasn't much potential that they could have done with that, honestly. But this, I think they could have done a lot. And of course, people have done a lot. You know, Mel Brooks and they made the whole Not Another series.
Mm-hmm. Which started strong.
That's true.
And even the Scary Movie series. Scary Movie was the first one. It was good. You know, they got kind of weak after that.
Yeah,
but although, I just got.
I think when they even became self-referential with sequels.
Yeah,
but like so, I think like the first three Scary Movies. I don't know how many they actually made up to. Like in the second one, they're like, "Well, it's got to be. There's got to be a trilogy."
Oh yeah, but I'm talking about like when they got to Epic Movie.
Oh, yeah. You're talking about the Not Another's, yeah. No,
was that a Not Another Epic Movie? No, it was just Epic Movie. It was the Scary Movie, but as a superhero thing.
Yeah.
Just as a son of a carpenter, I have to nitpick something. The shop teacher kept calling a chainsaw a buzzsaw.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that didn't make any sense. None of that made any sense.
But there were a couple of lines I did get a kick out of. The principal saying he's been secretly naked under his clothing for years. And when everything starts to get weird, we hear the psychologist say, "I tamper with nature as a hobby."
Right. There were a lot of very strange off-the-cuff background lines that they kind of just threw in. Or you're not sure if they threw in or if they had actually came up with these it was written that way. But
after that line with the principal, it starts getting weird.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, it does. When they start revealing killers.
And you know, that chase through the hallway, which at the time for me bought it half a brain. 'Cause I'm like, what the fuck is this? You know, where is this going? And then they get to a double twist.
Well, are we talking about the one sin, even if it's in a parody movie?
I was wondering if you were going to be pissed off about that in this case.
And yes, even in a parody movie, this is like a thou shall not do under any fucking circumstances unless your name is Bob Newhart.
Well, Bob Newhart, but what I was going to ask is, do you hold that against the OG that they directly reference in this? Everything else I can understand holding it against, except Bob Newhart, but it was the original.
Well, you're talking about Oz?
Yeah.
I guess that's kind of what they were parodying in the end.
They directly referenced Wizard of Oz.
That's true. That's true.
Turned out to be a dream. I, why am I trying to talk around that?
Yeah, I know. Anybody that's listened to this show enough should know by now that the one thing that will piss me off to no end is that it was just a dream.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I guess another person that could get away with it, Neil Breen, of course.
Of course. So I'm sure Shane could pull it off somehow that wouldn't piss you off.
Oh no!
If he ever makes another movie.
I don't know if we're ever seeing that.
And then the twist at the end, where the boyfriend turned out to actually be the killer. And then we see her reaching up through her grave at the funeral. I kind of liked it at first, but more I thought about it now.
Yeah, I was twisted out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One last bit of trivia. Student Bodies features a cast of true unknowns. Most of them, including Kristen Ritter and Matt Goldsby, the leads, have never made another feature film. Incidentally, Ryder did appear as a dancer in the J. Geils Centerfold video. Her resemblance to MTV's Martha Quinn led to an urban legend that it actually was Martha Quinn in the video. So,
and you know,
the woman
I'd
in the centerfold video who looks like Martha Quinn was the woman in this movie.
I'd actually assumed she was somehow related to John Ritter or the other Ritter family. But I guess not. And, you know, she wasn't bad or anything in this either. You know, I mean, in fact, most of the cast.
Yeah, I can't think of any really dreadful performances.
Right. I mean, the material was what it was. It was the material that let us down.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the end. If you're going to write a Zucker movie, you need to
you need to be the
have
Zuckers.
A lot of gags.
Yeah. On to sequels and remakes, I'm just going to say nope.
Nah.
On to Brains.
On to Brains.
I liked the first half. I hated the second. That's straight down the middle. I'm going 2.5.
I'm going a straight out 2. I would have done 2.5 too, but the dream...
That took it down. Yeah, yeah.
The brain.
All right, so what have
we learned? Brain if it hadn't been a parody.
Yeah. All right, so what have we learned?
The killer should be in the room with the suspects when they call.
Yeah. And I learned that literally anything can be a murder weapon. All right, that's it for Student Bodies. Until next time, when we'll be reviewing Phantom of the Paradise for our 400th episode.
Oh, man. My life has been turned upside down. And
notice I always say until next time,
okay,
not
good.
Until next week. I learned my lesson on that years ago.
Because things, I really want to do that. And, of course, our 400th episode and everything. So I'm putting...
We're facing the possibility of another hiatus. Probably not 4 months this time.
God, no.
We're hoping to be back next week with it, but our next episode will be 400 and it will be Phantom of the Paradise whenever it happens.
Yeah.
All right. So until then, of course, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.